All right, joining us on our Zoom line. I usually say phone line, but actually this is our Zoom hotline here, news line, and we've got Mr. Joe Sinnott with Whiting Partners. How you doing today, sir?
I am doing all right, Jason. Happy to be here.
Whiting Partners, that's correct, right? I almost said Whiting Partners because we just did a story on Whiting Petroleum last week, so that's fresh in my mind, but it's W-I-T-T-I-N-G, Whiting Partners. And we'd like to bring in Joe to talk a little bit about sustainable leadership, because right now with the energy transition, of course, a lot of either boardrooms are changing leadership, and there's all kinds of examples out there. We've even got shareholders being changed in I think it was Exxon who had the shareholder shakeup, if you will. And then you've got some people just going through kind of a re-education training and different sessions where they're, you know, whether it be diversity training or it'd be inclusion training or sustainability. Of course, we got the buzzword ESG, which everybody seems to be talking about these days. So we bring in Joe to talk about sustainable leadership. And is that a term that you and I coined, or is that a term that you coined, or how did that, you know, because we use sustainable in so many different things. You know, we've got sustainable marketing programs we're doing with the industrial forest and this and that. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about sustainable leadership and, you know, why that's an important term people should know. But first, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jason. I always enjoy a visit to the crude life, of course.
So let's talk about sustainable leadership. Quick definition for people before we get into this BBC article.
Yeah, so sustainable leadership is the ability to keep moving forward towards some ultimate objective for you, your team, your organization, and avoiding the things that could derail you and limit your odds of long-term success. So that's it. It's the ability to keep moving forward as a leader, in layman's terms. As far as whether or not you or I coined this, unfortunately, no, I don't think we can claim the trademark on sustainable leadership. It is a concept that has been out there, but certainly when I transitioned from my years in more traditional oil and gas roles into this world of leadership coaching and executive coaching, playing off that often vague word sustainability and focusing on leaders within the energy industry made a lot of sense. So I've embraced it. That's the world I'm in. And again, always happy to be here and chat with you about, you know, what that means practically for leaders in our industry.
Let's transition or switch over to the BBC article that I got emailed to me via whatever newsletter or website I'm involved with, a number of different deals and things. And of course, I was a correspondent for the BBC during the DAPL protest. They reached out to me and I was part of their international news program as a correspondent. So it caught my eye, but it's a topic I've heard over and over and over again for the last 10 years and probably even longer than that. So it was interesting that somebody put it into text, into an article, into a journalistic format. And it's about how narcissists have just flourished over the last 10 years in corporate America, becoming promoted and everything. And of course, now we've got a movement kind of away from the traditional narcissistic, you know, the Wall Street greed is good type of a corporate, you know, Americana mentality that kind of took over. Talk to me a little bit about your reactions about this article and, you know, some of the claims and, you know, that sort of thing, whether narcissists are finding it easy to succeed in corporate America and et cetera.
Well, into the article, I think it's important to note that, yes, I agree with the findings, the study they did, which is the correlation between narcissism and narcissistic leaders and the promotion of those leaders is real. And but at the same time, I think it makes sense because many people might associate narcissism with a degree of confidence, sometimes overconfidence or confidence at the expense of everyone else. But, you know, there are obviously a lot of companies who are looking for confident leaders. So again, you know, at first glance, it's, well, you know, this isn't a surprise. You know, narcissism can go hand in hand and, you know, without going down the path of all the negative aspects and results of narcissism, you know, let's acknowledge that, yeah, narcissism, confidence go together. And, you know, they often, again, are correlated to one of the most common things that companies are looking for in their leaders, which is executive presence. It can be a very vague term at times, but again, executive presence often is related to confidence, and confidence is often related to narcissism. So, so at a very high level, looking at the headline, reading through the article, there wasn't any surprises, but kind of like you said, it's nice to see it in writing so that we can have a conversation like this. And so that, individuals who may have these tendencies or individuals at organizations who are working with or looking at narcissistic leaders also have a framework of how to deal with it and how to still continue moving forward in a sustainable manner, even when you're surrounded by a culture at times of narcissism.
Interesting when you kind of think of the Me Too trigger and even, some of the sex trafficking down in some of the different areas and just some of the different things that, whether it be emotional abuse or sexism abuse or those types of stereotypes that come into a narcissist, which is really the dark side of a narcissist. I found it really interesting that the article even got into that. They kind of approached it more from the, sexism side with the recruitment, different things. But to me, of course, my mind went right away to that that emotional abuse that a narcissist can bring into a relationship. Then, of course, Joe, as well as I do, that of course spills into a toxic work environment. So whether it's we're talking about a 1-degree narcissist or a 10-degree narcissist, at the end of the day, it does bleed into a toxic workplace. Is that fair to say?
It is. Regardless of what the source of the narcissism is, the reality is that narcissistic tendencies are going to trickle down. And I think, again, the article hit on that, right? When you have an individual narcissist, especially at the top of a company, now other individuals are going to, emulate it, whether they even intend to or not. That's the culture. That's how people are going to be rewarded. That's how people are going to move up. And, what are you talking about when one narcissist infiltrates everybody else? It's culture, just like you said. And, the other thing I think you hit on is, again, the root of narcissism can come from different places. It could come from, some trauma. I think the article may have referenced, understanding, okay, why is this person a narcissist? And we can talk about that too, because that also matters. While, again, the root of it, you're going to have bad results no matter what. It also can matter in terms of how you deal with it. What is the root of that narcissism? Is it truly somebody who, has self-doubt and, actually has confidence issues and even so far as fear and self-loathing? Or is it the other type of narcissist, which is more, to borrow from some of the organizational and industrial psychology papers and such, psychopaths, right? I mean, to put it bluntly, I mean, that is the true term, right? I mean, there's some psychopathic tendencies in some narcissists where, it's not a matter of self-doubt and self-loathing and everything else. I mean, it is truly just cutting themselves off from everybody else to keep moving forward blindly to serve themselves. So again, all great things that this article, I think, brings up that we should talk about, and it all leads to a better understanding of what's driving some of these individuals as they, unfortunately, move up the corporate ladder and spread their influence on the larger culture.
You use the word psychopath, and I have to kind of chuckle because, I've been covering politics and government affairs for over 20 years, so you meet a lot of different personalities, and so you also hear a lot of different phraseology, and of course, when you're a writer, you pay attention to the grammar, you pay attention to the language, you pay attention to the adjectives and the adverbs and everything else, right? And so sometimes a few of us over the years, we've kind of chuckled because we'll name a politician, we'll look at each other, and we've got a grading scale. Is it a sociopath, a narcissist, or a psychopath? Because there's three different levels there. A sociopath is kind of the entry level, and the narcissist, then you got the psychopath. But because, a politician, of course, their job is control. And so there's just, their whole job is to control people. And so it's just, you got to be very careful of that. And so when you look at that, kind of ridiculous, snarky, behind the scenes, journalistic Wizard of Oz behind the curtains, you can see a little bit of a parallel to the corporate America, because the person in charge really does have a lot of control over people's emotions, their livelihoods, and their personal freedoms now, with the vaccines being part of the culture we're in, and you know, whether you're with social media now, your personal life is so much of your public life, to where there's new responsibilities now for owners. There's new responsibilities for leadership. That's why we've got Joe on here as much as we do, because this is serious stuff. And whether we want to talk about the ESG movement hitting your bottom line, or we want to talk about protests of putting children under crude oil, fake crude oil in Seattle because the teacher's pension fund has got a oil company that's connected to it or something. This is serious stuff. So I got on my soapbox there, on my oil drum there, Joe, at the last second. But I wanted to just really emphasize that, you know, we can joke about certain things, but at the end of the day, this is some serious stuff, isn't it?
It is. It is. And again, because not just because there is the focus on, you know, empathy, which can be a vague term at times, and, you know, ESG and weeding out some of these toxic leaders, but because the reality is the industry is going through an identity crisis, multiple identity crises. And what happens when individual leaders or companies as a whole are going through an identity crisis? Well, again, you start to have doubt and you start to question, all right, you know, what's going to go on, you know, over the next couple of years? And that can lead to at least what can be externally viewed as narcissism. You start puffing out your chest a little bit more. You start, you know, leaning on, you know, what you've done for the prior 10, 20, 30 years of your career. And, you know, you start disregarding other people out of, again, self-preservation at times. And that's obviously not sustainable. It's a natural human reaction in many cases. And again, it could look like narcissism, but in reality, it's largely driven by fear. It's driven by identity crises that are driven by the state of the industry. And, you know, again, we can talk about the state of the industry for the next hour, but, you know, needless to say, everything that's going on from a political standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, from an ESG standpoint, it's leading to some identity crises. And that, again, can manifest itself in some narcissistic-like tendencies, which, again, can influence the whole culture if they're not nipped in the bud.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the energy industry specifically, because there is a change that's happening. And, you know, the narcissism and the narcissistic leaders in this article that the BBC did, which I thought was a very good, just kind of an awareness piece more than anything, because there is some, you know, identification signs as well as, you know, what to do. I guess I don't even know if there's even a what to do. There might have been a paragraph at the end or two, but it was a very good piece that was put together. We'll have the links available at the website. But I was at your website, WittingPartners.com, and you've got a little bit of, you know, the F word is the kind of the word, your hook, if you will, to try to get some people in. So we're talking a little bit about corporate America and in the energy industry here in your latest blog or your latest, looks like podcast piece here. And so I got it pulled up here, Energy Detox, the Authentically Fraudulent Part 1. So let's talk a little bit about that. Explain that, first of all. Give people the quick overview before we dive in a little bit more.
Sure. Well, the context behind the Authentically Fraudulent series, if you will, it's only part one of two, but I think two parts make a series, is one, talking about my own transition from years identifying as, you know, as an engineer, as a technical leader within, traditional oil and gas departments and roles, and then discovering that what drove my success and my, you know, everything that I accomplished was not so much driven by the titles that I had, but more, the leadership development, the coaching mindset, if you will, that I had that I didn't even know I had. So it's, you know, identifying times where you might be seen as a fraud because, again, you're based so much on your title and what, you know, you think people expect of you, when in reality, what's driving you might be something entirely different. And so from there, you know, I expand upon obviously helping to identify the bigger picture items, the bigger pillars, if you will, the bigger drivers of what it is that you're searching for, right, as an individual, as an employee, as a parent, as whatever the case might be. So, you know, we talk about, again, from an identity standpoint, actually figuring out, you know, who the heck you really are, and not just the leader of a company or a team or a department or, you know, again, an engineer or a radio host or a podcaster or whatever the case might be. But from there, the idea is doing some practical things to ensure that you're aware of those times where you're veering away from what your ultimate destination are. Because it's when you're veering away and, again, you start to have this self-doubt and this fear, that's when you can start making decisions that could lead to, quite literally, fraud, right? This BBC article talks about how narcissism can lead to leaders, because they're they feel like they need to make these decisions, and they're okay making these risky decisions even if they're uninformed. And what can it do? It could lead to decisions that could take people down an unethical path, a fraudulent path. So coming back to something you just said before your question, Jason, it all is about awareness, right? This article is good because it boosts people's awareness, not just of their potentially being narcissists, but awareness of the narcissists around them, and then being able to ask themselves, all right, what can be done? But the first step, of course, is understand what the ultimate goals are. Understand what the ultimate identity of a company is, especially one that's in flux. And again, that's the basis of that podcast that you referenced, the Authentically Fraudulent series. First and foremost, getting clear about what your ultimate goals are so that you can work backwards and figure out the best way to get there, or figure out all of the various things that you might be doing from a behavior standpoint, specifically narcissistic behaviors we're talking about today, that could limit your odds of getting there. So again, long-winded explanation of what it is. Obviously, if you want to invest the time to listen to it, you're more than welcome, or peruse the transcript. But I think this article does a much better and more succinct job of, again, saying, hey, look, you might be driving yourself in the wrong direction. You might not even realize it. So let's get back together and figure out what your ultimate goal is, and then use that ultimate goal to say, all right, you're not going to last very long in your current role position, again, whether it's professional or personal, if you continue down this narcissistic path.
I think last time we did Crab Bucket, right? Crab Bucket Leaders?
We did.
Okay, and then this time we're doing narcissistic. We should start a podcast series just from the interviews we're doing on different types of leadership. And the next one, I'm going to give you a homework assignment now, okay? Because I don't know, have you ever heard of a velvet glove leader?
I have not.
So this is a term that I've heard in the construction industry, all right? So in the construction industry, it's basically a third generation builder, okay? The first generation is the one that goes out and builds one house at a time, builds the company one house at a time. Son comes to work for dad. Well, the son is part-time office manager, part-time, worker, because really the dad only knows how to be the general contractor type of a thing. Well, the son, he's kind of the best of both worlds. Third generation comes along and is just the office, goes to college, learns how to run the business. They actually never pick up a hammer when they become the owner of the company. So they're called the velvet glove leadership, to where you've got somebody running a company like a construction company, and they've never even picked up a hammer before. In real estate, it's kind of like the realtor trying to sell you a house and they've never owned a home before, that type of thing. So it's a leader that is trying to lead you through waters that they've never even gone through before. But it's a velvet glove leader is where I've heard it my whole life through the construction industry. So does that type of a description make sense to you, sir?
It makes sense. And it sounds like a great conversation for a future Crude Life episode.
Well, I do think there's a lot of companies going through that right now, actually, to where the third generations are taking over. And it's not a problem. I don't think it's a problem. It's just a problem if the company is trying to hide from the fact that maybe their leader has never picked up a hammer before. And that's not a bad thing. You just have to, it's kind of like if you draft, a running quarterback. You got to build the team around what your skills are. You got to build your team around what the talent is. So if you can't even be honest with what your talent is, you're probably not going to have a successful organization.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, Jason, that again, we mentioned awareness a couple times already. If you have, that velvet glove leader, that third generation leader that's maybe coasting along more, at least from a distance, than his predecessors, the key to make sure that doesn't lead down an unsustainable path is to make sure that they're aware. They're asking the right questions. They have a feel for what their limitations are, right? And that does tie in very nicely to narcissism. A narcissist, in many cases, isn't even aware of what his or her limitations are. And, certainly other people around them might be, but, they're not asking the right questions to discover what their barriers are and what the behaviors that they're exhibiting are that are, again, very limiting. So, it's a universal solution or potential solution to a lot of these subpar leadership approaches, but it's you know, and as cliched as it might sound, it's all about awareness. It's about asking the right questions, not being afraid to ask the right questions. So you get the feedback, you boost your awareness, and you're much more likely to continue heading down a sustainable path.
Well, how can people get in touch with you? What are you doing these days for customers? I know you're running seminars via the Zoom medium and other things, but I was talking to Dr. Lauren Scott in the last two conferences and speaking gigs he went to either got canceled or, you know, kind of, well, he went to a conference and they basically canceled it the day before, but all the speakers were there. So the speakers did the conference via Zoom at the conference while nobody else was there. And so they're just, I mean, dude, people are just trying new ideas to make things work. So I know that, you know, you're a thought worker out there and a lot of conferences are kind of, you know, your bread and butter and a few other things. So let the people know some ways how they can give you some business and how you're making money these days.
Sure. Well, the primary means of making money and my primary focus is one-on-one executive coaching. So working with individuals one-on-one, you know, not out there, you know, giving workshops, not out there giving talks. I enjoy doing that. It's a great way for me to, you know, not just obviously share some of these ideas, but to listen to large groups of people and hear their feedback, which makes it better when I'm working one-on-one with individuals. So my primary focus, again, is existing leaders within energy companies who are looking to, again, boost their awareness, look for behaviors and traits like narcissism that could be holding them back, holding their teams back, and holding their organizations back. So, you know, if people are interested in that and, you know, how that can impact their bottom line, always happy to have a conversation. Obviously, connecting on LinkedIn is always an easy route to go, as is going to my website, which is Witting Partners, WITTING, partners.com. And again, always happy to have a conversation about the ways that good energy-focused executive coaching can help individual leaders avoid things that can unwittingly hold them back from long-term sustainable success.
Well, I'll give you a plug on how we used to use somebody like you in the radio business back when I was in the radio business. You could about imagine, right? All those type A personalities. And there was, I think, 6 or 7 radio stations under one roof, right? So you're talking about 50 plus type A personalities under the same building, right? So we had multiple consultants like you on retainer who would just come in and basically you guys were the bad guys. You guys were the ones who would come in and say, okay, that person needs to change this. This person needs to change that. This person needs to change that. So there's multiple ways to use executive coaches as well as consultants and other things, because it's all about, you know, at the end of the day, getting a positive change. And sometimes with some of these volatile personalities, whether it is a narcissist or whether it is a type A personality in the media, they still have positive attributes to bring to the company. That's why they're hired. So to bring in somebody to help you navigate those waters, that to me is really the value that you bring more than anything, Joe. Just to give you a real life example of how we've used somebody like yourself in the past in the media. Now, I don't know how that translates to other industries, but, you know, it's almost like, you know, kind of a professional hitman in a way. So
I like that. Well, I am from New Jersey. So, you know, there's always some mobster connections there when you're from Northern New Jersey outside of New York. So, I'll take the hitman analogy, but no, I think you hit the nail on the head, Jason. I appreciate that. And I do think, you know, in terms of, you know, how is it applicable in different industries? It is applicable across any industry where companies are spending a lot of money to hire, you know, top talent or to, you know, grow top talent over a period of years. And clearly it's much more efficient and much more, you know, profitable and better for the bottom line to maximize that existing talent, those existing resources. And that's where bringing somebody like me in, instead of having to hit the reset button and try to replace, you know, large swaths of the organization or even one individual who might be higher up, you know, again, it's a heck of a lot easier to lean on a coach who can come in and ask the right questions and get people moving quickly instead of some much larger undertaking, whether that means, again, replacing a leader or some larger, more expensive, you know, consulting initiative that might not even generate the same results as just, again, maximizing the existing resources, the existing talent, you know, the existing knowledge that is within all these companies, again, whether they're, you know, oil and gas or even beyond.